Hello, I'm Trish Kubelis. This is number 0120, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0120. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, reporter and filmmaker Paul Johnson and his new documentary, Binny Boy, the story of one man's quest to find Osama bin Laden.
Gary Brooks Faulkner made a lot of news about a year and a half ago when he was found in the very violent tribal areas of northern Pakistan, up in the mountains there, alone, wearing a robe with a sword and night vision goggles, and on a one-man mission to hunt down Osama bin Laden.
Tim O'Brien from Ripley's Believe It or Not talks about their new book, which is called Ripley's Believe It or Not, Strikingly True. Ripley's has a very wide fan base, something Tim experienced himself on a recent flight.
There was, I would say, a college student on one side of me, and there was an elderly lady on the other side of me. Both of them, when they saw me looking at it, commented and started talking about it. And the college kids, oh, every Wednesday on Sci-Fi Channel, I watch your show. I love it, Mama. I love the Ripley. Look at this book. This is really cool. And then the lady says, well, I remember growing up back in the 40s listening to Mr. Ripley on the radio. So everybody, I mean, we've been accompanied since 1918, and we've been, as we say, we've been proudly freaking out families for 93 years.
Dr. Henry J. Sveck is the author of The ADHD Fix. Why does it appear that there are more people being diagnosed with ADHD today than before?
Some believe that the symptoms are more prominent today because we don't have as much structure. We don't have as many logical consequences and discipline in our world for children and young adults. So that perhaps children 30 years ago who would have been in a very structured environment, they knew exactly what the consequences were for their behavior. Parents were more perhaps reactive in their discipline. A lot of children with ADHD may have been able to maintain behavior and performance because of that structure, which may not be there today.
And of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0120, was Trish Kubelis, who is from Human Resources at Global Montreal, the place I also work at. She is also very involved, by the way, with the Strachan Hartley Legacy Foundation, which you can find more about by going to their website at shfl.ca. And they provide youth the opportunity to achieve their full potential through sports and education. By the way, Trish just completed not too long ago, basically I believe it was last year, a climb in 2010 of Kilimanjaro, which raised over $80,000, the proceeds going to youth who need it the most. And that, again, is with the Strachan Hartley Legacy Foundation. So, again, you can check out their website, shfl.ca. And, again, thank you very much, Trish, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, you're familiar with Nintendo's Wii game, right? Well, now there's a new video game that is actually controlled by Wii. Your Wii. Your Wii Wii, to be exact. The world's first urine-controlled video game has been installed at the Exhibit Bar Men's Room in London, and men can play one of three games every time they answer nature's call. The game was designed to create a valuable media opportunity for the 55 seconds the average male spends while he pees just staring at a blank wall. Of course, a short ad plays before the game promoting a drink special at the bar. Then players fire away to control the game and try to score points. At the end of the game, players are encouraged to post their scores to Twitter and to a live leaderboard so they can compete with their friends. If they prove popular, the units will be rolled out in selected venues across the UK in early 2012. Now, I know the men out there are thinking, damn, this is a great idea. And the women in the audience are thinking, hey, wait a minute. Guys can't aim. They can barely hit the toilet bowl. Well, Ladies, let me tell you how it works. We can rise to the occasion when there are points and competition involved. So there you go. Elsewhere, in one of the most ridiculous claims about homosexuality to emerge in some time, a Peruvian mayor is blaming the high mineral levels in the area's drinking water for turning men in the town of Huarme gay. Mayor Jose Benitez has made the bizarre comments at the launch of a local water access project, where he noted high levels of strontium in the tap water. The drinking water comes from Tabalosis, a town which a Lima-based television station once claimed was inhabited by 14,000 gay men. Benitez said, unfortunately, strontium reduces male hormones, and suddenly we'll be as Tabalosis as other towns, where the percentages are increasing of homosexuality. Dr. Robert Castro Rodriguez, the dean of the College of Pharmaceutical Chemistry in Lima, quickly dismissed Benitez's claims, telling Peruvian radio that large amounts of strontium in the body eventually leads to bone cancer, anemia, and cardiovascular complications, but not homosexuality. Gee, I bet the mayor is now breathing a sigh of relief. But he has cancer to look forward to. In Leicestershire, England, a guy was trying to surprise his wife with a lobster dinner, so he left a somewhat cryptic message on Facebook saying that he was on his way to the Martin Hobbs fish market to kill. One of his Facebook friends saw the message and called police, so as our friend left the market with two live lobsters, he was met by no less than four police cars and officers wearing bulletproof vests who arrested him on the spot and put him in handcuffs. Now, once he explained that his kill message was meant for the lobsters, the officers let him go. An employee of Martin Hobbs said, "When they took his handcuffs off, I went to see him because he looked a bit shook up. He saw the funny side of it eventually when he stopped shaking. He said he had never been in trouble before in his life." Of course, the PETA fans who regularly listen to this show are now screaming, "Hey, wait a minute! Why did the cops let him go?" Oh, who am I kidding? There are no PETA fans who regularly listen to this show unless they're masochists. Unless, of course, they belong to the fringe PETA group that I do, and that's the one that stands for People Eating Tasty Animals. Okay, we have one more story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our first guest on the program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Now, just in case you need a little reminder that cheating on your spouse with a hooker is really a bad idea, check out what happened to Titus Nkube of Zimbabwe. Nkube was having problems at home, so he went off and rented a hotel room. The father of three then decided to have a hooker sent to his room for a little late-night action, but got more than the shock of his life when the young lady showed up. The prostitute ended up being his own 20-year-old daughter. Yikes! Nkube was reportedly so stunned he collapsed. The daughter, also shocked, bolted from the room. Believe it or not, it kind of has a happy ending. Nkube later said, "I am sorry for what I did. I spoke to my wife and my daughter. I apologize for my actions because I just wanted my family back. We're happy to report that the daughter has since stopped hooking and is now going back to school." Mr. Nkube and his wife are seeing a marriage counselor to, as he says, "help us get over the most difficult period in our marriage." Oh, sitting around the table at their next Christmas dinner, they'll just look back at this time and laugh and laugh and laugh. Ah, good times. Anyway, on to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Paul Johnson is a television reporter at Global National here in Canada, full disclosure, the same network that, as I mentioned earlier, I work for. Paul is the correspondent based in Washington, D.C. Now, last year we had him on the Stuff File program when his novel, The Pashtun Fixer, came out. This time around, we have him on the show to talk about his latest documentary project entitled Binny Boy. Paul joins us on the line from Washington. Hi, Paul.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us once again. So this, first of all, what does Binny Boy mean?
It's kind of a strange name, isn't it? Well, Binny Boy is short for Bin Laden, as in Osama Bin Laden. And this was sort of the nom de guerre that was used by the protagonist in my new documentary, a guy called Gary Brooks Faulkner, made a lot of news about a year and a half ago when he was found in the very violent tribal areas of northern Pakistan, up in the mountains there, alone, wearing a robe with a sword and night vision goggles, and on a one-man mission to hunt down Osama bin Laden. Gary is an American guy from a town called Greeley, which is north of Denver in Colorado. And as it turned out, after Gary was captured by the Pakistani army, for his own protection, I may add, this was his seventh trip to the tribal areas of Pakistan.
How many trips?
To hunt down Osama bin Laden.
How many trips you said he took there?
Gary did seven trips by himself, totally unauthorized, to the tribal areas of Pakistan. And as it turned out, we later found out when Osama bin Laden was killed, Gary was really only a couple of hundred kilometers away from where bin Laden actually was in his mission to do this. And, you know, I got interested in this. I've covered the war in Afghanistan and Kandahar province, and I know a bit about how dangerous it is in those areas. And I was so stunned by, even though Gary didn't succeed in his missions, the mere fact that he was able to go to Pakistan on his own with very little money and not get killed, I thought this was kind of a monumental achievement. There was certainly an interesting story there. And as I got to know Gary over the course of the year shooting this documentary, boy, was it ever interesting. And it was a really compelling chapter in my life, hanging out with Gary and hearing about what he did.
Now, when you talk to this guy, when you meet this guy, do you get this feeling that he's, A, either an amazing patriot who is the gutsiest guy on the planet, or is just out of his mind?
That's a very good question. And I don't think there's been any definitive answer to that question. My take on Gary is that Gary Faulkner is not insane in any kind of medical, clinical definition of what that is. Gary is certainly crazy and kind of crazy and bold. And one of the people who you'll see as one of the characters in the film is Gary's brother, Scott, who was actually a medical doctor there in Colorado. And so Scott knows a lot about mental illness. And you know, in being interviewed for the film, Scott says that it's his belief that Gary is not insane. Gary is just a guy who comes up with some pretty wild ideas and tries to follow through on them. And, you know, you spend time with Gary, and, you know, you very quickly realize this is not a guy who, you know, has a background that either he is proud of or most of us have been proud of. And it makes his story more interesting. Gary spent most of his adult life in prison. Gary was a thief and a criminal who operated in northern Colorado, and he specialized in stealing things and doing heists and, as he calls it, boosting stuff. Safes, jewelry, forklifts. I think he tried to steal a helicopter once, although he didn't know how to fly it. These kinds of things. And this resulted in Gary spending a long time in prison. When Gary was released from prison the last time, this was after 9/11, and as he tells it, you know, he still had the urge to do something really big, to boost something really big. But he didn't want to get in trouble anymore in the United States. He didn't want to go back to crime. And he says he thought about what would be the biggest coup that I could pull off. And he realized that would be catching Osama bin Laden, because he felt very passionate about what had happened on 9/11. And Gary, to his credit, a guy who was an ex-con and had very limited job opportunities, really had no knowledge of Pakistan, or I really think had ever been out of the United States, took it upon himself to raise enough money and organize a trip. And he did these seven trips to Pakistan searching for bin Laden. So kind of a monumental achievement. I mean, really, when you think about your own life and you think about the things that you'd like to have done but you haven't done, and you think about the excuses that you've made, you look at what Gary Faulkner did, and it makes you realize, I really don't have any excuses.
Now, does your film, Benny Boy, include the most recent news, the fact that Osama bin Laden has been indeed captured and killed, or does your movie end before that?
The movie includes that, and that happened during the shooting of the movie. And it's interesting because it really had a profound effect on Gary, I think, in that, I mean, Gary's also a Christian. He is very devout, and part of what Gary believes enabled him to not get killed, you know, hiding out in the mountains of Pakistan with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda up there, and this is a guy who doesn't speak any of the local languages, as you can imagine. Gary believes he was protected by God, and Gary believes that his mission was kind of preordained by God. And that literally, he was on a mission from God. So it was very tough on Gary because he was happy that bin Laden was killed and was taken out. But I think that was a confusing moment for him, and that's something that really caused him to reassess what was going on. And I think you'll see in the movie, this is something that Gary has had to learn to be at peace about. Well, another big component of the go ahead.
Well, you mentioned the fact that he wanted to do something big. He didn't want to get himself in trouble by stealing things or boosting things. So he focused on going after Osama bin Laden. Now that bin Laden is gone, aren't you concerned about what he might be plotting next? I mean, should the State Department be worried about Gary?
I mean, that's a good question. The State Department, the country of Pakistan. Any other country that has, you know, some kind of high-profile person who Gary might be interested in? Yeah, I mean, Gary has shown the ability to show up in these places. And what is Gary going to do in the future? That's really anybody's guess. But one thing that you come to find out, and this may sort of answer the question about whether Gary would mount some mission like this again, is Gary is suffering from, I believe it's called polycystic kidney disease. Gary has total kidney failure, and he's on a kidney transplant list in Colorado, and Gary now needs dialysis three times a week for four-hour sessions. And to see in the movie, we actually go into the dialysis with Gary. So Gary is actually limited in what he can do physically. And it was my understanding when I first met Gary and heard about his story and started shooting the film, that his kidney disease had either began or had worsened after his missions to capture Osama bin Laden. But then I come to find out, no, this is the incredible part of the story. Gary was actually on dialysis and in total kidney failure the entire time he was over there hunting for bin Laden. And you're like, well, how could somebody do this and stay alive? And, you know, as it turns out, Gary kind of just sucked it up, and he would go up into the mountains. He would really push himself, I think, beyond the point where he was starting to feel sick because he needed dialysis. And then he would hike down into some of the villages in Pakistan, and he would actually find local clinics where they had dialysis machines, get dialysis, and then go back up into the mountains.
Now,
you know, who does this? A motivated guy.
Well, yeah, in discussing this and talking about this, in doing Gary's story, do you think Gary's really, really unique, or is it possible there are other Garys out there?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, in examining Gary, I was trying to think, what are the kind of examples are there about Gary Faulkner's? Well, mythology and storytelling and literature certainly gives us some examples. The most famous one that comes to mind is the myth of the story of Don Quixote, who, interestingly, was about Gary's age in his early 50s when he decided he would leave a life of boredom and go out on this great quest in medieval Spain and achieve great things as a knight errant, as he was called, and he would tilt at windmills and do all of these things. Gary's kind of a throwback to that personality. It doesn't seem like there are a lot of Garys in the world these days.
Hmm.
And one of the things that I kind of examine in this film is I suspect that there still is something about the culture of the United States that produces this kind of person. You don't see this kind of person coming from, say, France or from Japan. Or do we see Canadians even who do this that much? I don't know. This kind of real rugged individual who is incredibly motivated to do something that everybody else would think is totally crazy. And I wonder if this is still something that's kind of embedded in the cultural DNA of the United States more than any other place.
The film,
myth of the open range of the cowboy. And it's interesting, Gary is from the West.
Right. The film is called Benny Boy. How can people find the film?
Benny Boy is available on Amazon.com, and you can buy it there either as a disc or a download. It's spelled Benny Boy, B-I-N-N-Y, Boy, subtitle, One Man's Hunt for the World's Greatest Fugitive. And I invite you to check it out. You certainly won't be bored.
And people can also go to your website at pauljohnsonfilms.com, correct?
And at pauljohnsonfilms.com, although Benny Boy is not yet available, but will be in the coming days.
I thank you very much, Paul, for being on the program with us.
Hey, my pleasure. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Reporter and filmmaker Paul Johnson. His film is called Benny Boy, and you can check out Paul's website at pauljohnsonfilms.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0120, and you'll find links to Paul's website and also links to Amazon.com where you can order the DVD directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're experiencing The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Tim O'Brien from Ripley's Believe It or Not, plus we'll also touch base with the author of The ADHD Fix. And of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day coming up a little later on. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. Now, talk about unbelievable. 25-year-old Jesse Dimmick of Aurora, Colorado, is currently serving an 11-year sentence for kidnapping a newlywed Kansas couple, stealing a vehicle, and fleeing from authorities back in 2009. Incredibly, Dimmick is now trying to sue that couple for breach of contract. In his lawsuit, Dimmick contends that after breaking into Jared and Lindsay Rowley's Topeka area home while fleeing police, he and the couple reached a legally binding oral contract that they would hide him for an unspecified amount of money. Dimmick, who is representing himself, go figure, is seeking $235,000 in damages. In court file papers, Dimmick said, as a result of the plaintiff's breach of contract, I, the defendant, suffered a gunshot to my back, which almost killed me. The hospital bills alone are in excess of $160,000, which I have no way to pay. Dimmick held the Rowleys at knife point, and reportedly they were able to gain his trust by eating Cheetos and drinking Dr. Pepper with him while watching the movie Patch Adams. They escaped unharmed after Dimmick fell asleep. He was later awakened by police. While being ordered to lie face down, a Topeka officer's rifle accidentally discharged and shot Dimmick in the back. Dimmick's breach of contract suit was filed in response to a suit filed by the Rowleys seeking $75,000 for home intrusion and causing emotional duress. In the meantime, Dimmick is also facing a murder charge in connection with a 2009 killing, which is why he was running from police in the first place. How do these things even manage to tie up valuable court time? That's what I want to know. Frightening indeed. Anyway, in Vienna, Austria, Swedish-born headmistress Ylva Maria Thompson says anyone over the age of 16 is welcome to enroll in what she calls the world's first college of applied sexuality. Students actually live in a co-ed dormitory where they're expected to practice their homework. Thompson says our core education is not theoretical but very practical. The emphasis is on how to be a better lover. We discuss sexual positions, caressing techniques, and anatomical features, and we teach people hands-on. Rather racy advertisements showing a couple making love have already been banned by Austrian television. What I'd like to know is, are parents happy or sad if their kids flunk out? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Brazilian condom company, Ola Condoms, has been using Facebook in a most disturbing way to basically try to scare its market base into using their products. They call it the Unexpected Babies Campaign, and they've been creating fake Facebook profiles for future baby boys by taking an existing profile's username and tacking on Junior to the end of it. The profile picture is that of a smiling infant, and the Facebook user then receives a friend request from his virtual offspring, along with the message, "Avoid surprises like this one," and a link to Ola's website. In an article about the bizarre campaign, Adweek says, "Kind of a clever idea, though labor-intensive and surely against Facebook's usage guidelines. No word from Facebook yet. But we're sure there will be a word or two from them. Just you wait and see." Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? The folks at Ripley's continue to put out great books. The latest one is entitled Ripley's Believe It or Not, Strikingly True. Now on the line to tell us about the book is Tim O'Brien, Ripley's VP of Communications, and also one of the hosts of the Ripley's Radio Show, which is Ripley's Radio, an on-demand oddcast. Hi, Tim. Nice to have you back on the show.
Hey, thanks, Peter. I love it.
So the latest book, again, as I said, Strikingly True, and I know I've asked you this question before, but after all the years of doing this, does anything surprise you anymore?
Well, we get hardened by just going to the mall on Saturday afternoon. You know, after that visual, nothing surprises you. But yes, we do get a few things in which we don't actually put in the book or into our cartoon strip or whatever. That's a little too edgy for us because we try to stay family. But, you know, anything anymore pretty much goes with most teenagers. So to answer your question, yes, occasionally, but not very often.
Well, primarily, because you just mentioned teenagers, for instance, primarily, who's the target audience for the Ripley books?
It sounds a little trite, but really it's for everybody. An example on this book, I picked up a copy just before I left corporate offices one day for a trip, and I got on the flight late, flew Southwest, so I was in the middle seat, and I pulled the book out to get myself familiar with it, and there was, I would say, a college student on one side of me, and there was an elderly lady on the other side of me, and you know, both of them, when they saw me looking at it, commented and started talking about it. And the college kids said, oh, I every Wednesday on Sci-Fi Channel, I watch your show. I love it, Mama. I love the Ripley. Look at this book. This is really cool. And then the lady says, well, I remember growing up back in the 40s listening to Mr. Ripley on the radio. And, you know, so everybody, I mean, we've been a company since 1918, and we've been, as we say, we've been proudly freaking out families for 93 years. But it seems like everybody knows the brand, and everybody has some story to go along with it. Now, specifically, I would say our attractions are family-oriented to the younger, I would say the 8 to 12 to 14-year-old with the kids. And we find out that the kids go shooting through it and enjoy some things and yell, ooh, gross, a couple times and walk out after they've gone through it. And the mom and dad are still back in the first gallery reading everything and having a good time. So it's a fun brand to promote and to get out there because it's so different for everybody.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the things that are actually in this latest edition, which is entitled Strikingly True. And one of the things that caught my eye, what is this? The Scottish brewery has sold limited edition bottles of $1,000, but there's an animal inside. Now, you can get tequila with worms, but this is weird.
Well, this is a limited edition, what they put out. And what they've done is basically, you know, they've bottled their product and then found a live animal, which they've taxidermied, and put the bottle coming out of the animal's mouth. So it works with smaller animals, mostly squirrels. The squirrels were the most popular, from what I understand. But so, you know, you walk in and you see this squirrel looks like it's standing on its hind legs. Then you take a closer look and there's a bottle mouth coming out of its mouth. And you just unscrew it or uncap it or whatever and pick up the squirrel and start drinking. And you kind of look at the squirrel eye to eye as you drink. And I can think that's pretty disconcerting.
Well, you know, we do live in such a politically correct world. I can't imagine that going over well in this day and age. Just PETA alone would be up in arms. How do they manage to do this?
Well, you know, that is so true. And, you know, we have that problem with our aquariums and whenever we show live animals. Circuses have that problem. And how a brewery gets away with taking dead animals, you know, and selling them as part of their product, I don't know. It's they successfully did it, though. It was a limited edition. Maybe that's the way they got away with it.
How, if any way, shape, or form, has politically correctness, bringing it up, affected Ripley? Has it been a problem at all with some things you might put in magazines or articles or books years ago that you wouldn't do today?
Absolutely. You've got to be a little more careful. But in the long run, politically correct, I think, is an individual commitment. What, you know, while the squirrel thing is not politically correct, it bothers me just because of the animal aspect. But obviously, the marketing people at that brewery, it didn't bother them. So they didn't see anything wrong with that. And so in this world of individualism, we have to be careful more from being politically correct to being culturally correct. And we run into that problem a lot of times when we, like our Believe It or Not museum we built in Bangalore, India. We had to really, really be careful and work with local designers and local people there to make sure that we didn't step on the customs of the families. Same way with Jeju Island in Korea, South Korea. We opened that just about a year ago, and we had to be real careful there as far as the way that we presented things and sent several exhibits back that they didn't feel were that good. And even in the States, you know, Peter, people in New York that see things see them from a completely different view than somebody, let's say, in the Wisconsin Dells or in Branson in the middle part of the country.
Right.
And same way with Hollywood and Orlando. So, you know, it, in a bigger city, we can be a little more edgy than out in the country. But, you know, it's just, each case is off by itself. We really have to be careful.
Now, there's always somebody, it seems to be, who is either growing fingernails or hair. This time around, there's a woman in Florida who has hair 19 feet long. I'm sure you must spend time when you put stuff together in these books just simply asking the question, why?
Why? Exactly. I often say that unless you have to ask why or shake your head and marvel, it's not a true believe it or not. And in this case, Asha has grown her hair. Since that picture was taken, it's grown almost another foot, by the way. It's over 20 feet now. And she carries it around on her back, you know, she like a backpack almost. When she's driving in her car, she uses it to cushion her lower back. You know, she wads it up and sticks it behind her back. But she just loves it, and she doesn't want to cut it. It's really part of her now. It takes a bottle of shampoo once a week to wash it, and then it takes almost 2 days for it to completely get dry. And she's marvelous. She takes it with a sense of humor, and you know, that's the cool thing about the Ripley people as opposed to, let's say, the world records. Most of the people in Ripley are eccentric enough to be doing this stuff not to get into Ripley, but just because they want to do it for themselves.
Right.
And then we find these people, and it really brings a whole good, almost an organic feel to a lot of the stuff that we find, because these people are doing it because they're weird and eccentric and bizarre, and not just to get into Ripley's and get attention from us. So that's fun. And Asha was one of them. She seemed overwhelmed when we wanted to take her picture and have her in the book. And we've had her on several radio shows and a couple TV shows with us when we were promoting the book. And she's just very humble and just very whimsical.
And Jonathan Trapp, who traveled across the English Channel, attached to 55 helium balloons.
Yes. Now, who hasn't wanted to do that?
He wasn't in a lawn chair, was he? That's all I have to.
Nope. That was a guy that went over the Rockies several years ago. But and you look at him, and on something like that, you ask why, and you can almost answer it yourself. The guy is obviously an adventurer, but you look at. Yeah, we've got one really, really picture that I think was pushing it, not because of what was going on, but because of the picture. There's a gentleman in our book that has cut out a hole on his chin. And so what you do is, you know, this is all part of the whole body piercing and body modification trends that are going on. But this guy has a perfectly round hole, I would say maybe 2 to 3 inches big in circumference under his lip, and you can look at it and you can look right in and see his gum and his bottom of his teeth, and you look at that and go, oh my Lord, why in the world would you do that? But his ears are also have the big holes in them, and when he goes to eat, he has to put the plug, like you put in your ears to make them bigger, he puts a plug into the hole in his chin so his food doesn't fall out.
Well, he must whistle on a windy day.
that's a very good idea, yeah.
The book is always, the books are always fun. The latest one is Ripley's Believe It or Not, Strikingly True. People can find the books in bookstores everywhere and find it online at Amazon.com, and people can go to the Ripley's website, which is www.ripleybooks.com. I thank you very, very much, Tim, for taking the time to be with us once again on the program.
Oh, it's always my pleasure, Peter. Thanks a lot.
Tim O'Brien from Ripley's Believe It or Not. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0120, and you'll find links to Ripley's site and to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you ever received a letter congratulating you on winning a class action lawsuit that you didn't even know you were a part of? It's becoming pretty common. The problem is, when you read the fine print, you often find out that you've actually won nothing, while the lawyers got a huge payday. Some believe these scams have become more common because class action lawyers have learned to craft their settlements in ways that make the judge look good. In one settlement in a class action against America Online that was approved by a federal judge, the 66 million members of the class would have gotten nothing, but thousands of dollars would have gone to charities not even involved in the lawsuit. And the board of directors of one charity included the judge's husband. Let's be fair, I'm all for helping charities, but a federal appeals court was right to eventually strike down this settlement. Class actions are supposed to benefit the class first, not the lawyers or the judge's pet projects. Find out more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about ADHD, and of course we do indeed have an idiot of the day. But before we get to our next guest, I got one more Stuff File story that I'd like to share with you. And you know, it is the holiday season, and it just wouldn't be Christmas without a good holiday ornament stabbing. Police in Southington, Connecticut say 55-year-old Ruth Wagner used a seashell ornament to slash another woman while fleeing from an arts and craft fair vendor that accused her of shoplifting. The merchant saw Wagner allegedly swipe the ornament and then yelled for others in the crowd to apprehend her. Another customer who heard the merchant's pleas for help tried to block Wagner's path, but Wagner allegedly then stabbed him in the arm with the pilfered decoration. A fragment broke from the ornament and left a wound serious enough for the victim to need surgery. Other witnesses jotted down Wagner's license plate, enabling police to track her to her home, where they arrested her later that day. So now she's charged with robbery, assault, reckless endangerment, larceny, and breach of peace all over a stupid Christmas ornament. Clearly, some people are mildly confused over the true meaning of Christmas. I think Ruth Wagner is one of those people. God bless us, everyone. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Dr. Henry J. Sveck is a psychologist who has written a book about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It's entitled The ADHD Fix, 15 Strategies You Need to Start Using Today to Break Through into Your True Potential. It's something he knows a little bit about because he himself has been diagnosed with ADHD. Dr. Sveck joins us on the line right now. Hello, doctor.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Oh, just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. We hear a lot about ADHD, and one of the things that some people talk about is the fact that a lot of people tend to believe that is it really something real, or it's something that a lot of people dealt with in the past, and it's not really a disorder. Obviously, you disagree with that.
Well, there's truth to the fact that in some cases it can be overly diagnosed. And I think that gets to really the first question is, how do you need to have it if you have it, or someone you love has it? And, you know, we talk about in the book that you really need a comprehensive assessment. So ADHD or ADHD that's diagnosed usually comes from an assessment that includes a brain image. So experts can, when they look at the brain image, is that a brain image of someone who has ADHD? And it increases our likelihood of being accurate from about 80% to about 95%.
Okay, so what exactly does it mean to have ADHD?
Well, ADHD is really a neurological or a brain dysfunction which causes one, depending on the type of ADHD, causes you to have difficulty focusing, paying attention. You may also have anger issues because of the part of your brain that is, in fact, deregulated. And we believe it's very genetic. Usually there is a history in the family. Now, the initial part of your question is a great one because some believe that the symptoms are more prominent today because we don't have as much structure. We don't have as many logical consequences and discipline in our world for children and young adults, so that perhaps children 30 years ago who would have been in a very structured environment, they knew exactly what the consequences were for their behavior. Parents were more, perhaps reactive in their discipline. A lot of children with ADHD may have been able to maintain behavior and performance because of that structure, which may not be there today.
Okay, now, as I said in the introduction, this is something you yourself have dealt with. You went undiagnosed with ADHD for 34 years. Now, clearly you are successful at what you do. How do you go so long without being correctly diagnosed and be as successful as you have become?
Well, you know, this is my, I believe, fourth career. So there's a lot of issues when you're not diagnosed. In my case, my personal symptoms had a lot to do with the real fluctuations up and down in performance. So one day you do something that, you know, everyone says, boy, that's great. That's a, you know, that's an A paper in school, or that's a great performance. The next day you do the same amount of work, you think, and you can't even get a barely acceptable kind of product. So over a period of a lifetime, you start to question, you know, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do it today if I could do it yesterday? So that was a big symptom for me. The other one had to do with creativity that you don't put into practice. So that you have a lot of creative ideas, but then you jump to the next one and the next one before you even accomplish anything. I was lucky in one sense because I've got ADHD, I have some learning disabilities, and I also have a small gifted package, thankfully. So that can help you. But for me, as I talk about in the book, the symptoms were initially in high school. You know, my grades from about, I don't know, 85 in grade 9 all the way down to probably, I think I graduated with 60.5%. And so as the work gets more complex, you start to have problems, but don't have the organizational skills, and you don't have all those things as in planning to help you get through.
So had you been diagnosed earlier, how would things have been different or easier?
Probably, well, that's a great question. I mean, in hindsight, I think one of the things that it probably would have been easier to do were the issue of self-esteem. Most of us with ADHD over time, we start to have self-esteem issues because we again start to wonder, why is this going on? Why is my life like that? My biggest, I guess, moment came when I was diagnosed, because when you're diagnosed, you finally start to understand. It's not like it's an excuse for problems, but it sort of makes you understand why things have been going this way. And then you can develop strategies and structures and things that you need in place to be successful. That's where the energy comes. You know, I talk about ADHD is a lot like that Niagara River. You know, it's a bit out of control. It's flowing fast. But when you harness it, you get some incredible things. And that's really what ADHD is about. That's what we're excited about. When you use the right strategies, even if you have the diagnosis, you're going to surpass other people who don't have ADHD because you have some real gifts with it. And you ask me the question of, you know, how did I get to? Well, I think a lot of mine is the energy I have, the fact that, you know, pretty much most of the day, a lot of creative energy. And as long as I focus it and I'm aware of what level I'm at and how I can manage that level of focus, I can do probably more before 8 o'clock than some folks get done all day.
Now, when you talk about focus, does that focus require any kind of medication? And the reason why I bring that up is you talk about the energy you have and sometimes not being able to pay attention. I know sometimes in school these days, people are very, very quick to, say, give kids Ritalin.
The medication issue is a big one. I think that it's up to parents or the adults what they. In my case, I didn't use medication. Medication can be helpful, but you still need to work on the strategy. In my case, because my mind is of a mild to moderate inattentive type. So in other words, I can be sitting there looking at you, Peter, and it looks like I'm paying attention, but I'm gone. So I didn't have the behavioral component, but I had a lot of the inattentive parts. And later, when I looked at my brain image, it sort of tells you why. So in my case, I could manage it by doing things like, for example, in my case, crossing. So my general day is I start early, usually 5 or 6. By the time I have breakfast, by 9 o'clock, I need some cardio because that brings my focus again back to a level where we can probably work till noon. So I've learned different strategies along the way, and the structure I have and the kind of stuff I use that reminds me what to do every day and all those kinds of sort of things that I have in place. Back to your very original question, allows me to perform, I think, very well in what I do. Only things I do well, the other things I have to hand off. So there's a lot of things I don't do well, accepted that, and I get other people to do that for me.
Okay, so somebody with ADHD like yourself can be very successful and part of society. What types of things that someone with ADHD has, what are the types of things they can't do?
Well, I think a big one that comes right out is we really have a hard time doing monotonous, boring day-to-day work in the sense that we're often, as adults, entrepreneurs who love to start businesses, come up with creative ideas, solve problems. But then when it comes to the day-to-day managing of a business, we're not very good at that. Or the day-to-day mundane type of thing. We're also often not good at detail. So often we need others to help us with that kind of thing. in my case, my learning disability is I need a lot of backup. So when I do something, I still need a lot of people to look at it to make sure it's okay. It depends on the type of ADHD, but basically we have a problem if activity that we're doing is repetitive, mundane. There's also an oppositional piece. I should mention that, you know, it's really cool as an adult when you're oppositional, because what that means is you don't take no as an answer. If you're doing a project or something, or a bank says they won't give you a loan, you just don't listen to them. You just go to the next person. Whereas as a child, that can be a problem in a classroom. Someone says, do this, and you say, no, I'm not doing that. Well, it's difficult as a child, but it's actually a gift as an adult, because we persevere and do things that a lot of people would quit and stop along the way. We don't. We just keep going if we have that oppositional, and fortunately, I have that too.
So, for instance, you wouldn't do very well at a car plant working on the assembly line.
Oh, my goodness. That would be torture. Okay. I couldn't. I've never been able to do, you know, in my work as a clinician, the beauty of being a psychologist, when you're working in private practice, you see a different person every 50 minutes. So everything changes. And in my work, when I do that, or now and when I do all my other work, I probably have 3 or 4 different things that I do on a day, different bits. I have them really sort of in a box. So I start this one, I stop it, I start this one, I stop. It's really focused attention. So I'm still doing different things, but I have a plan, I have goal achieving, and it's all very focused and based on that one activity or that one business.
Who did you write the book for? The person who has ADHD, or perhaps the parent or loved one who deals with someone who has ADHD?
Well, my son Joshua and I wrote the book because he also has ADHD. He wrote the book because we wanted people with ADHD and the loved ones around them to know it's actually, managed properly and use the right strategies. It's actually a gift that can really propel you. You know, and we start about the stigma. If you look at the number of people in the world who have ADHD or thought to have ADHD, who did incredible things, the list is unbelievable. And you look at it in athletics and business and professionals and art, see it across the span. And I'm always fascinated when I meet successful folks with ADHD that want an assessment, but they're still successful. So we find out how they got there. And generally, in most cases, it's the type of strategies we have in the book. So we basically took those kind of, you know, real-life solutions and said, if you do this, you know, you have a great opportunity to fill your toolbox and be successful.
The book is called The ADHD Fix, 15 Strategies You Need to Start Using Today to Break Through into Your True Potential. How does one go about getting the book?
Well, it's on Kindle. It's also at theadhdfix.com, and soon it's going to be at Barnes & Noble and all over the place. So the best place to check it out is the website, theadhdfix.com.
Dr. Svek, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. Great chatting with you.
Dr. Henry J. Svek, author of The ADHD Fix, 15 Strategies You Need to Start Using Today to Break Through into Your True Potential. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0120, and you'll find links to Henry's website, plus also links to Amazon.com, where you can order the book directly for the Kindle. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
Boston police have arrested 47-year-old Grant Smith of Cottonwood Heights, Utah, after his Delta flight landed at Boston Logan International Airport. Allegedly, Smith wasn't just looking at porn on his computer while sitting in first class. He was looking at child porn. A fellow passenger saw the images and alerted the flight crew. Smith has been charged with possession of child pornography, and police say additional charges could follow. Now, why would someone look at any kind of porn, never mind child porn, on a commercial flight in a crowd of people? One reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0120. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Again, just look for the corresponding program number. That's 0120. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. And you could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.